Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastu Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Page 25. Okay. 226. If, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life is always born and dies forever, you still have no reason to lament. So this would be according to the materialistic concepts, how these mean in this case, born meaning that he's not saying comes into existence by separating himself from the Brahman and coming under illusion. Here it would be the element that the material energy itself is generating life, right? So now, having established that there's no reason to lament because the body is all that's doing the activity, the body is what dies. Right? That's what we consider death. But the soul doesn't. Right? So there's no problem there. So he shouldn't lament. But he's saying, even if you consider that you're lamenting because the body is dying and that one is the body and like that, even if you consider it that way, there's no reason to lament. Right? So here, then, which philosophies do not accept the existence of the soul? There is always a class of philosophers who do not accept the Vedas and thus do not believe in the separate existence of the soul beyond the body. Right? Because we see most all will consider the body the soul. Like that. Right? Even the Mayavadis who believe in Brahman, they'll say, we're Brahman. But the point is the life symptoms and that we have here, that's due to the living entity being an illusion and think he's separate. So therefore, the body and all that is actually the life that we see, right? Though they'll say we're Brahman beyond that, but still the actual interactive dynamic, what's here, they will say the same thing. So there's technically no difference between them and the gross materialists, right? Just that the one wants God to fulfill all their needs and the other one wants to be God, right? Because, nobody else fulfilled my needs, so if I'm God, I'll do it myself, right? It's a standard... So in other words, you could say that the karmi is the natural feminine nature where it feels that it by work I will get the results I want, and having not been frustrated by that, then the impersonal, the Mayavad philosophy is the natural feminine reaction to not being taken care of. Does that make sense? So it's still the same thing. So, in other words, the Mayavadis are like the ultimate in feminine liberation. Right? that's all. Because their whole point is that we want to be independent, we want to do it ourselves because no one else is taking care of us. Right? You understand? So it's not actually a spiritual philosophy. You know what I'm saying? It's just cloaked. Just like, let's say, if you're doing something that's not that great, right? It means, but you're in the society of people who follow a elevated culture, right? So are you just going to say, yeah, no, I'm a girl. I'm really, really attached here, and, it's really nonsense, but, I'm going to go for it. You're going to say that to other members of the community? No, you're going to find some Shastric element that's going to back up your idea of what you're doing. No, no, but we're just, you know, engaging everything in Krishna's service, and everything's Krishna, and so therefore we can connect everything to Krishna, and in this way, like that, you know, so does that make sense? So that's what the Mayavadis are doing. Right? It's a completely gross, materialistic idea. They don't want to, at this point, enjoy through the senses, but the point of enjoying, that my effort of my work will end in the result of me enjoying. Right? That's the generic definition of Ruhita. Right? But you don't see any external work as such. It's all on the intellectual platform. So it appears as something different. Right? Does that make sense? So you have material consciousness, which is one thing. Then it has these two varieties. One that does it by a grosser method, one that does it by a subtler method. Right? And the guys with the subtler always consider themselves superior than the ones with the grosser. Right? And the guys with the grosser always know that they're better off than the guys with the subtler. Yeah. Right? Because they got all the money and facility. Right? You know? Does that make sense? But on a religious platform, then the one looks better than the other. Right? Does that make sense? So it's all the same thing. So there, it's not that there is something new or different, right? We'll say, oh, it's a modern thing, you know, everybody wants their rights and their freedoms and that's as old as the hills, that one. Like that, you know, the Mayavadis already came up with that a long time ago. Before that, the Buddhists, right, they already pulled that one. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can you give some examples for us where we can be mindful of not being subtly impersonal, subtly in bringing in Mayavadi tendencies that are being into an application of the philosophy? Because gross, it can be quite obvious, but the subtle sometimes can be missed quite.
Yeah. Well, the subtle just means that we don't think the senses can be engaged in the Lord's service. And then the gross is that we think just because we're engaging the senses that it's devotional. Right? In other words, the karmi's mistake will be, okay, the senses can be engaged in the Lord's service, therefore whenever I engage, and I'm a devotee, therefore whenever I engage my senses, I'm engaged in the Lord's service. Though it's only when you actually consciously connected that you are. Otherwise, it's not. And the opposite will be, is that the senses can't be engaged. So anybody enjoying themselves or being happy, someone has a nice facility, has a nice house, nice car, he and his family are happy together. Like that. That must be Maya, right? Because it can't be right. Right? Because I tried that and it didn't work out, so therefore they're doing it, they must be doing something wrong. Otherwise, why are they happy? So that will be the Mayavad side. So we can't accept that the senses can be engaged in the Lord's service. You could cook nice prasad and eat that and it's not Maya. You know what I'm saying? So that will be the Mayavad side, is that we will try to make everybody the same. Though seemingly it's spiritual, but it's not. So renunciation is only valuable in its connection with the Lord, just as activity is only valuable in connection with the Lord. So renunciation is an activity. So you're either working with the thing or working not with the thing. But both are activities. Right? The Mayavadis think they're inactive, but actually they're active. Right? Because renunciation is still a conscious endeavor. Right, so that's what Krishna says: there's inaction and action, and action and inaction. Right, so for the devotee, there's inaction and action because they're performing an activity, but being connected to the Lord, there is no karmic reaction. Therefore, they're spiritually situated. Right, while the Mayavadis, they appear to be inactive because they're not physically doing a seemingly fruitive work, but they're doing that work for their own pleasure. They're doing that lack of work for their own pleasure. Right? They're not like the lazy person who's just sitting there and doesn't want to do anything. Like that. They can easily do something, but they're making the concentration and effort to always be acting in a renounced way. So it is action. Right? Does that make sense? So that means it's getting result. Material result is coming. But it's seemingly inaction compared to karma. So they think they're inactive, but they're not. Yes.
So the lazy person is inactive, or he is active?
Well, it's just like, is this stone active? What happened to myself? Here it is.
Yeah. That was a tomato, wasn't it? Yesterday.
That's yesterday. that's so yesterday. So yesterday. You know, I mean, come on, you know, get with it. You know.
Okay.
Got to keep up here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's inactive.
It's inactive,
yeah.
Right? So that's the point. They're just in ignorance, so they're inactive.
So the devotee is also inactive, but...
But at the same time as their inactivity, they think by their laziness they'll be happy.
Mm.
So there is still a reaction for it.
Mm.
And because they do nothing, they don't get anything.
Mm.
So their reaction is they end up with nothing.
Mm.
Right? So it's not that they don't have any facility this life from being lazy. They don't have any facility this life from being lazy last life. It means this life's laziness will be next life's, lack of facility. You know what I'm saying? Is that... When the Lord spoke, the Bhagavad Gita appears that such philosophers existed, and they were known as the Lokayikas and Vaibhashikas. So the point is, these mentalities are always there, just at different times they have different names of what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Such philosophers maintain that life symptoms take place at certain mature condition, a material combination. Right, not that they can create it.
Hmm.
They just say that that's how it does. Okay, then in the the note on this, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to this verse, having given his own opinion on why one should not lament for the soul, the Lord now speaks of the opinion of others. In order to give other viewpoints, right? So what Krishna says is his view. That's always to be taken as the prominent, right? Then there's so many other options that you could do that are bona fide, right? And then in this case, he even gives what's outside. But the point is since the point is it's connected to Krishna's work, what he wants to get done. In other words, Arjuna fight. Even if this works, it's still connected. You get benefit, right? The point is, it's not connected, you're not getting any benefit. Right? So always when Krishna gives a list of things and he says, in my opinion, it's this, take that one, that's the primary one. Then other ones are trying to accomplish the same thing, but the forms of them aren't so obvious. Right? Like that. It's not that, there's 10 different options. No, there's one option. Right? And then there's the very obvious way that option is performed. Right, so that's direct. Then you have all these other ones. These other nine are doing the same thing, but through other methods that connect with our particular conditioning. Does that make sense? The student, knowing these viewpoints and consequently destroying them along with their contamination, should remain fixed, victorious in the Lord's viewpoint. Right. So the student, knowing these viewpoints, in other words, one should know the viewpoints. Quote, when one is endowed with a body, such as the human form, composed of the four elements, earth, water, fire, and air, consciousness arises simply from that, just as red color arises from betel nut, or the potency arises in liquor, right? It just arises. You have sugar, which is not alcoholic, and you have the fruit, you have the water. None of them have alcohol, but by them sitting there together for some time, the alcohol just happens. Right? Just like the betel nut is green. Right? And you can add the chun to it or whatever you like, it's other color. But then when it's ground or chewed, it turns red. So just like that. Their point is it's very easy, right? Just like that. Okay, cool. Right? It's not been done. Right? Right? Other than the combination of the husband and wife, there is no life is coming. But it just happens. Right. The body made of four elements is itself the Atma. The body is real, and it is a subject of appearance and disappearance because of its nature of constant change, and this is known by regular perception. That is what the Lokayatas maintain. Charvak is their leader. Right? So that was before, is what we were saying, is that the body is that. So they're saying the body is real. So that's the difference between them and the Maya bodies. The Maya bodies will say also the body means the material energy is the cause of the life symptoms. But it's actually an illusion that they're there. So here the difference will be also is that those on the side of Gyan will say what you see is illusion. Right? And on this side is that no, it's actually real. But in both cases, life is coming from matter. What was that? Okay. The Buddhas, such as the Vaibhashikas, maintain that the Atma is Vijnana Swarup, different from the body, but it is still an object of destruction at every moment. In both these philosophies, there should be no lamentation for the Atma. Right? So here is that they'll say is that the body. You could say the soul is different from the body, but our point that it's generated from the material phenomena, that's the same. Does that make sense? Right? You have Brahman. Then somehow or another, some portion, some illusion covers some portion of that Brahman. Right? Just somehow or another. Brahman is unlimited, all-powerful, unchangeable, like that. But somehow or another, and there's only one substance, Brahman. But somehow or another, there's this illusion. Where it came from, we don't know. You know, maybe the devil had something to do with it, right? You know, it's like that Beelzebub guy. You know, you got to watch this guy. So somehow or another, that it covers a portion of it, and that portion now, being under illusion, now thinks they're the body, right? And therefore all the life symptoms are there, right? So therefore the life as is known is coming from the illusion. That illusion is the material energy. Does that make sense? Though the soul is Brahman, is separate from that, but still what we call the body, and the life symptoms are coming from that itself. Does that make sense? No? How is it possible? How is any of this possible? It's all bogus. You know what I'm saying? You know, just a combination of matter, and then suddenly, you know, the kids are out in the backyard playing with, you know, mud and, you know, cooking and this and that. Suddenly, you know, poof, you know, it turns into something.
Mom. Like,
my mud pie. Your imagination's getting too much here, you know. You got to stop watching all those cartoons, you know. It's going to make you like that, you know. Does that make sense?
So it doesn't make sense.
Huh?
So it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. But the point is the mind so easily catches it because of just the element of being the controller and enjoyer. Or that, you know, we are the body. These illusions... You know, because of our dependence, we're attached to it, so our facility is coming from there, so we're attached to it, so we identify with it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So the point is that the Lokayatas, they'll say is that the dead matter itself, by particular combination or mature combination, then the life symptoms spring forth, and that's life, and it's always changing and adjusting, and then and because it changes and adjusts, it also then disappears. You know, so it's like you're going to say, well, it came into being, you know, and then it always changes. So therefore, that changing explains death also, right? Since it's always changing, so therefore it comes into life, it maintains and changes, and then it dies. Does that make sense? The other one is saying it's the same phenomenon is there, that the life symptoms are generated from the dead matter, but the soul is separate from that. The one will say the soul is the body. No one will say the other. But the life symptoms and that you have a body and you do all these things and all these attacks, that's all illusion. And it's not real because there's only Brahman. You know? But if it's not real, why would we even bother with illusion even as an element of discussion if it's not real?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole problem is it's very... And all these... there's. Parts of it seem very logical, parts of it don't. So they just, whichever you're attached to, karma or gyan, then one of these two philosophies will catch your attention. Right?
It seems that either one of these two philosophies, they eliminate value as a concept.
Value, yes. Well, because that's why Prabhupada says the Mayavad and these, they generate sense gratification. Mm. The Buddhism means there's void. Mm. So what's the standard? So what actually does it mean? Because they'll say, good work gives you that, but who defines good work?
Yeah.
You know, if it's all illusion anyway, why is it you say one part of the illusion is good and one part's not? Wouldn't that be illusory that you're giving some value to illusion?
Mm.
You know, so the Mayavad philosophy, the Buddhistic philosophy, gives rise to sense gratification. That's why we see in the modern society, you know, in those cultures that are more liberal, then the kind of dabbling in Buddhism and Mayavad and all that is more prominent, because it gives rise to sense gratification much better. Because if you follow these other ones, there's a restriction. Even the Protestants, there's some restriction. If you go back into Catholicism, you know the Orthodox, Judaic, then there's much more restriction. So you wouldn't want to go that way, you know. So, but you want to do something that's, you know, odd and exotic and everything like that. So you go to the Far East, and that's more. You know, East, Far East, so then you get the Mayavad, the impersonal, all these Buddhistic and Zen and, you know, so many varieties of things. You know what I'm saying? Because it seems sophisticated. Like the Japanese, the Shinto, the anthropomorphism, and or what is it? Also, there's another kind of nature itself you just give life to.
Pantheism?
Huh? Pantheism? Yeah, pantheism, and then like that. It's more sophisticated and all that. You know, while they could use the local Red Indian one, but that would only kind of go down in those who are really into the more natural. So, you know, you could do it, you know, parts of the East Coast, a few places there you could use it, and that would probably be cool, you know, to be a shaman or something like that. But other than that, then it might not, there would be very, very few places would go for that one. But you could go for the farther east, it's more sophisticated, you know. Does that make some sense? Yeah, so it's just, it's natural. So that's the point of this, is that we start to see is that these things aren't new. Nothing's new. I mean, the soul's not new. It's always been there. God's always been there. Material energy's always been there. That means material consciousness has always been there, and it follows these two paths. Now, it may have variety within karma and jnana, but the varieties being dictated by the modes are still always the same. Just to give it different names, that's all. You know what I'm saying? People were protesting back in the Greek time, but they weren't called Protestants. You know, during the Roman time, they were protesting. They weren't called Protestants. Right? In other words, the main class won. You know what I'm saying? But the Catholics didn't win, the Protestants won, so therefore it became prominent. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the history is written by the ones who win, not the ones who lose. Right? The ones who lose are dead. Right? It's very hard to write things, you know, by either philosophy. Right? You know, one, the illusion is gone, you merge back into the voidness or oneness, or the chemicals are dead, you know, I mean, gone back to their innate state. So no writing goes on, right? You know, so no amount of Ouija boards or other things are going to actually make it happen. Right? Does that make sense?
Come on.
Yes.
So light comes from light, we'll counter there, basically light comes from matter, philosophy?
Yeah, means that's the point. That's why life comes from life. It's not that that's for the materials, then we have another one for the Maya bodies. No, life comes from life. Means that there's life symptoms, means that there actually had to have been life. So means life is real, and it comes from life. So therefore, if the Brahman is the source, that means that if there's life symptoms, it has to come from Brahman. That would mean illusion has to come from Brahman. So, because if that's the cause of the symptoms, then that means what's causing it has to come, because the Brahman has to be the supreme cause. Right? But that Brahman also has a basis, and that's the person. Like that. Otherwise, why would something that's impersonal be able to generate, you know, personal qualities? Is because it is the glory of the qualities of the person. You know what I'm saying? So still, it all comes from life. So it removes the Mayavada, it removes the karma. Like that.
So my that philosophy is mainly dealing with mind, with the misgivings.
With the mind, with misgivings of the mind.
Yeah.
Yes, you could say, because see, the misgiving is that what does the mind want to do? It wants to enjoy, right? Now, to enjoy, you have to be in control. You know what I'm saying? At least on the emotional platform. If you want to enjoy emotionally, you have to be in control of the emotional platform. Physically, you have to be controlling the physical platform. Intellectually, on the intellectual platform, right? So, the point, so, technically speaking, the intelligence of false ego, because the false ego is what manifests the body, right? So all three are all aspects of the same one thing, the mind. Like that, right? So then one is dissatisfied because one has tried to enjoy, be the controller and enjoyer on all three platforms, and it didn't work. Right? So very enthusiastic, but that means one very enthusiastically endeavored. Right? And from enthusiastically endeavoring, then there was no results. From being no results is frustration, right? So then after frustration comes anger, right? Does that make sense? So that means you end in Buddhism. Buddhism is anger, right? It means the impersonal is fear, right? And karma is, so you go from wanting to enjoy because you feel comfortable. Then when you notice you can't enjoy, what does that mean? Right? If the feminine principle can't enjoy, what's wrong? Is it the feminine principle?
No, masculine.
It's a masculine principle. So that means the masculine principle is not giving shelter. So then that means there's no relationship, so there's fear. Right? So that's the next thing. So then by fear, you make those arrangements, try to get it yourself. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're saying. It's a natural progression. Then, when that doesn't work, then it's just you throw it all out, and then anger comes. And so then, therefore, now it's just void. There is nothing.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the natural thing. If the feminine nature is protected, then there's that mood of enjoyment and variety and all the facilities there. If that's not there, then they try to get it themselves. When that doesn't work, then it just drops into, they just drop everything and don't want to do anything. You understand? So there's just the natural progression. So we see on the platform of the soul, when it becomes materially, that's what it does. Right, that. When it's embodied, it does the same thing. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that there's any difference. That's why we say there's nothing new. Does that make sense? So it's just that the frustration is there. The mind is frustrated. Because Ananda, you want to be happy. So what do they emphasize? Right? You are Brahman. That means you're in control. And there'll be the Anand Brahmananda. Right? So they're still talking control and enjoy. They're just talking on the subtlest platform, that's all. That's at the limits of the material. Right? And then until you understand, well, I'm, yes, Brahman, but subservient Brahman, and Krishna's the supreme controller, and my happiness is in connection with him, then you cross from the materialistic side of the Brahman platform to the actual, real Brahman platform, which is the, relationship with the Lord. So in other words, the permanent Brahman platform. Does that make sense? So that then is only permanent because it's naturally in relationship with God. So you're a person, he's a person. So being on the transcendentally situated is eternal. Does that make sense? Before that, one is situated in Brahman, but it's a temporary situation. Because you're situated there, but you don't actually have the real Brahman mentality. His real Brahman is, I am Brahman, but I'm subservient Brahman. And my happiness comes from somewhere else, from the supreme Brahman. Right? And so we're different. So that means by serving the supreme Brahman, that's actually how I'll be happy. That's the natural understanding of the liberated soul, if he's not contaminated by the impersonal philosophy. Right? Therefore, he can progress forward. If I'm servant, I render service. Yes. If my happiness is coming from that Supreme Brahman, then by association you get to know that Supreme Brahman. And that's Krishna. So that means that the living entity goes from being situated in the Tathasta position of Brahman to being situated in the internal potency Brahman. Right? Because now we're situated in the external potency Brahman. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Like that. So that, therefore, it switches.
Okay. These philosophies are
a little louder.
These philosophies are from time immemorial.
Yeah, no, they've always been there. They've always been a class, but it's very small. Like in like Satya Yuga, there might be a few tribals here and there or something, you know. But it's not predominant. You know, but as time goes in each age, then it becomes a little bit more and more comes out. So Kali Yuga means the maximum can come out. Like that. But the whole point of all these philosophies are how to enjoy. Either directly get in there and enjoy, you know, sit back and enjoy, or, you know, be God and enjoy. But in any case, it's going to be, you're going to enjoy.
Right. So there's no possibility of any real relationships in any of these two pseudo-philosophies?
Of having real relationships in these, no. Means they use the forms of it, but you see the Buddhistic culture that they use is actually the Vedic. Mm. You know, I mean, as it goes and then it takes on the other, you know, the Far East and things like that. But even that was is coming from from here. So they're all coming out of here, because this is the seat of the emperors. And they control the whole world. And so when it says the seven continents, it meant the seven continents. But the difference being is the Vedic is Oceania is the seventh, not Antarctica. That's a block of ice. Right? That's not a continent as such. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So Oceania is continent. But then Oceania, what happens, it gets claimed by all the other...
Yeah.
Other states, and so it doesn't exist separately. But they'll call it as a group of a landmass, but that's the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? It's just an island continent. Because one may say, well, that's weird, but Europe, as we pointed out, is a peninsula continent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's water from, you know, down at, you know, Spain, all the way up past England, all the way up past the Baltics, up to St. Petersburg. It's ocean. So it sticks out. So they'll say Spain is a peninsula, but actually the whole place is a peninsula. And then you have the Mediterranean, and it goes into the, you know, Black Sea, the Caspian Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That. So it's water all the way through. So it's just a big peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it means, so it's just more variety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Buddhas, such as the Vaibhashikas, maintain that the Atma is Vijnana Sarup, different from the body, but it is still an object of destruction at every moment. In both these philosophies, there should be no lamentation for the Atma, because their point is the concept of Atma, just like the body, is illusion. It's separate from. But it's separate in that it's a portion of the Brahman, or a portion of the you know, Nirvana. In other words, it's a portion of something that has no qualities. So that there is qualities, that's an illusion. It's generated from itself, right? The Lokayuktas will say if there's no illusion, it actually exists. It's real, right? So they'll say it's all this illusion that they're talking about, you know, that these other, the jnanis are talking about, doesn't exist. The body's real. Life comes to the body. This is it, right? Problem is with the this is it is one dies, right? Yeah. And so therefore, it doesn't, the show doesn't happen, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so we continue. The modern material scientists and material philosophers also think similarly. According to them, the body is a combination of physical elements. At a certain stage, the life symptoms develop by interaction of the physical and chemical elements. Right? You know, so it has to come. So it's there. You know, what's the standard? You have the primordial soup. It's sitting out there. And then a lightning bolt, you know, comes out of the blue, hits the ocean, and then our first, you know, protozoa starts. And then he starts splitting and splitting and splitting. And then one day he gets tired of that and decides he wants, you know, it's too slow, so he decides to grow, you know, some tails and feathers, you know, like this and that. And then, you know, he's restricted there, so then he decides to grow, you know, feet, and then he'll go onto the land. You know, he has to work on the lungs a bit, you know, instead of the water like this. And then somewhere in between, then he also got tired of just bumping into things, so he developed eyes, you know. So it's not well explained, you know. So but the point is, they don't, you know, where did the lightning bolt come from? You know, that's not explained, you know. So all these different. And you see a very good here is that the human form is composed of earth, water, fire, and air. In their concept, but that's also the modern is like that, because ether, space, is something outside. They don't really count it as an element. You know what I'm saying? Okay, 227. One has to take his birth. One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Right? So he took it down into these others that have no basis on the Vedas, and then brought it back into. So therefore, you know, you're not going to lament there, you know, because it's just chemicals. It's dead. Finished. You know. So now, therefore, one's going to die. One's going to take birth again. Right? So you cleverly brought it back into the Veda.
Yeah.
Like that. That's the mind is so, you know, because the mind is functioning without intelligence. So it's so easy to do that. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? So the point of note, why there should be no lamentation for the loss of the body? Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of the soul and the other not believing in the existence of the soul. There's no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheists by followers of the Vedic wisdom. Yet, even if, for argument's sake, we accept this atheistic theory, there is no cause for lamentation. Right? The point is he's lamenting for what's not worthy of lamentation. So even their philosophy will cover it. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, when Krishna says there's only one path, means all the varieties of philosophies, they're all on the same path. So they have some aspects that have validity, and then parts that don't. Right? So depending on how much validity is there, is how much closer it gets to Krishna. And how much it doesn't is how much it's away from Krishna. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So there's something there. The problem is that that's the only one thing, and it's only useful in this particular case. Right? Like that. If you're worried, you know, that the person was the body, and now they're dead, but the point is it happens. Right? You know? Does that make sense? You know, dead happens. So therefore, you don't have to worry. But the real point is the soul is something else that's gone, and that will then take birth again. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in course of time things are manifested and unmanifested. That is the difference. So the law of conservation, so that's God's law, is that all the energy, it remains. Energy is not lost. Energy is eternal. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why wouldn't it diminish? Mm-hmm. It would go into, it just transfers into something else. So it remains. When one thing goes into another, it goes into another. Right? Does that make sense? So that remains. So all the difference is that sometimes things are manifest and sometimes they're not manifest. That's all. Then what cause is there for lamentation, either in the stage of manifestation or in unmanifestation? It's dead matter anyway, so that means the life symptoms are just a matter of matter. So the matter is still there. So it's just transforming, so it's just one of those things that happens. Right? Does that make sense? somehow or other, even in the unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Both at the beginning and at the end, all elements remain unmanifested. Right, so everything will start from manifest and go back to unmanifest. Right? We're just looking at manifest. Mm,
yes.
And that's the other thing. It's manifest, it goes into unmanifest, and then back to manifest. Right? So then you get both philosophies. And only in the middle are they manifested. And this does not make any real material difference. Right? Mm. Like, you know, you read in the paper, you know, it's like a member who was at the time of the... Back in the 90s, I think it was, must have been, when they had that big San Francisco earthquake. You know, it was all in, you know, Newsweek, Time, all the papers of the world. And so, because generally all earthquakes or all volcanoes kind of go at the same time. It happens here and there in the world, wherever there's a weakness. So, the big headlines are the San Francisco earthquake, right? That 56 people died. Right? They're really freaking out. You know, that's a lot of people, right? And then you have always, you know, on the side columns, you always have like the little, you know, main points from around the world, other points of interest. One of those, in one sentence, you know, in the small print, you know, there is that somewhere in China, they had an earthquake that 25,000 people died. And that's the little news, right? You know, in San Francisco, 56 people died, you know, oh no, you know, like that. So that's the whole point. If it's not connected to you, it's not a big deal, you know. So we may say, no, but it's life, and that it's only important if it's connected to your value. If it's not, who cares? Yeah.
They value San Franciscanite is worth just under 50 Chinese people.
Just under 50?
500.
No, it would be more. 25,000.
No, 25,000.
50.
50 times. What's 50 times 50?
Maybe 2,500. So 10 times that. So 500.
500. So 500 times.
I mean, they are basically American magazines.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure in the Chinese magazine, you know, it was the other way around. You know? It might not even rate it. You know, it's like that 56. Who? That's nothing.
And a person from San Francisco probably makes 500 times what a Chinese person does. And so.
True. Yeah, the Chinese person isn't buying the magazine. Probably if they had an edition in China, then it would have mentioned the other one, right?
But they probably also have 500 times as much debt as the Chinese person.
That's also debt. There's so many considerations.
So, stakes are high.
Yes. From the spiritual point of view, all material bodies are perishable in due course of time, but the soul is eternal. Right? The one is that the soul, the body is just a transformation of the energy. The energy is always there. So the energy in its particular state produces these life symptoms. And the energy is not lost. So what the life symptoms are coming from the energy, it's not lost because it's the energy that remains. Right? In an unmanifest state, but the energy is there. Therefore, the life symptoms are just a aspect of the material matter. You know, the energy of the material matter. So therefore, what's to lament about? It's still there. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And then from the spiritual point of view, is that the bodies are perishable because of the nature of the temporariness of the material energy, but the soul remains, so there's nothing to lament about. Does that make sense? So whether you accept the soul or don't accept the soul, there's nothing technically to lament about.
Excuse me, Maharaj. I was wondering if you can explain a little bit more about the unmanifested energy.
The unmanifest.
Yeah.
Just like, let's say, you had this nice garden, right? And now, in the next season, it's a pile of compost. You understand? But the energy is still there. Because why is the compost there? Right? Because it has energy. So that will go into the next garden. You understand? So it's just manifest and unmanifest. You have water, it's just there. But then you drink it, it becomes part of the form.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, if somebody is asking about when the soul leaves the body, and it may go to, like, another body, that, like, that time frame, or...
Well, that's a different thing. That's not the conservation of energy. That's just what does the soul do, you know, in between bodies. Does that make sense? That's a different topic. Because right now, see, we're dealing with, because this is early, we're only on 228 of the Gita. So that means this is basically just, you know, less than 20 verses after Arjuna surrendered and asked Krishna to instruct him. So he's lamenting because all these different personalities on the battlefield will die. So he's just presenting all these. One, he's presenting his opinion. Then he's giving, even on the materialistic platforms, the opinions. So technically, from all opinions, there should be no lamentation. Does that make sense? You know, that's the point that's being made here. If the body is a dress, why lament the changing of a dress? The material body has no factual existence in relation to the eternal soul. It is something like a dream. In a dream, we may think of flying in the sky or sitting on a chariot as a king. But when we wake up, we can see that we are neither in the sky nor seated on the chariot. And the Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of the non-existence of material body. Therefore, in either case, whether one believes in the existence of the soul or one does not believe in the existence of the soul, there's no cause for lamentation for loss of the body. That's the point that's being made. Right? So, yeah. So it's that we dream that we are doing this because the soul is not actually doing anything. That's what Krishna is saying. So it's a dream that you think you are doing. You have a desire to do. Therefore, you're in the environment in which the activity is performed. The modes of nature are performing it with the body. But the soul identifying with it will consider, I'm doing this. Right? Does that make sense? So one would say, but then, you know, where would this concept come from that the living entity, you know, feels he's doing something? Right? Because everything has to have an origin. But we have to remember, yes, so that would be true, but the example would be given of you have the mirror, you know. Is the finger in the mirror scratching the nose? By one definition, you could say yes, but in reality, no, because it's not a real nose. So you have a not real finger scratching a not real nose, getting rid of a not real itch. Does that make sense? But the point is there is a real finger, there is a real nose, and there is a real itch. So that's the point. So the living entity in the spiritual world, in their relationship with the Lord, that is a real form. And they're performing real activities. Right? Getting real experiences. That's the original. So that's the point. That's Krishna's point, is that we're giving up the lamentation here, but we don't then, like the Mayavadis, that there's, you know, there's nothing here. Or like the Karmis, oh, it doesn't matter then, and you just enjoy life. No, the point is this illusion means is that it's illusory that the living entity will enjoy here. But that there's an original place of enjoyment, original place of life and interaction that exists. So that's different from both of these philosophies. Mm.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Means both of these philosophies catch a part of that, but not actually enough. Mm. Right? One remains within the material environment. Right? And being non-Vedic, it's sinful. Right? The other one brings it to the point of spiritual, but it's temporary. So it also has the material quality. Right? But the devotional, then that has the real quality that we're looking for. That's what we're trying to get to. Does that make sense? Right? Just problem is how you say, the illusion is thick, so then all these things, you know, are trying to... Yeah. What has that got to do with breakfast, you know?
And we're so forgetful that we kind of go in circles. So
yeah.
What about this, what about this, what about this? And we arrive back at the first doubt we had. But what about this?
Yeah.
We can take another turn.
And we have great fun, like dogs have great fun chasing their tail. They really go for it. I wonder if they stop because they get bored or they get dizzy or, you know they don't have that much determination, you know, like that. You know. Okay, so then, yeah. So in other words, it's a dream that we think that we are the body. Now, that the body exists, life symptoms are there, the body is doing the activities, then yes, it's real, like the Lokayatas say. But that is the soul. That's where they were wrong. Right? Right? But that the soul thinks they are that body, because the soul is separate from the body, so that's like the impersonal. And that the soul is separate from the body, and it's an illusion to think you are the body. That's the same. But to think that that the concept of life and interactions and relationships and engagements is illusion. That's where the Mayavad philosophy falls short. That's the end of its logical sequence. That's where then it comes under the illusion. Does that make sense? So you see, one goes a little bit, not much at all, and the other one goes a bit more, but they both end up very short. Does that make sense? Right. And we see also, as interesting as there, so the Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of the non-existence of the material body. It encourages that because it has a value. But its value is only as much as we give up our value of the material existence. Taking that as the prominent aspect, that's not of value at all. That's why the renunciation isn't the prominent element of devotional service. Right? It may be by volume very great, but it's the connection to Krishna that is the prominent. So in the beginning stages, there's more renunciation than attachment to Krishna. But at the end, there's less and more attachment. Until at one point, there's only attachment to Krishna. Just like at one point, there was no question of any renunciation. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's a tool that's there, right? Do we see that? We catch that? The Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of the non-existence of the material body. Right? Mm-hmm. So because of this, then either of these will make sense for that beginning stage. But then once that's started, then where do you go from there? Mm-hmm. Then it takes to the higher, but at the important point, you have to get to the devotional. Right?
Maharaj, you mentioned that the spiritual could be temporary.
The spiritual is temporary. It means the situation in the spiritual is temporary. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, we're looking at it, Krishna is everything. And he is the supreme Brahman. Right? So what does that mean? Everything is Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So you have four manifestations of Brahman, right, that are eternally there, present. Means the supreme personality, Brahman, the internal potency, Brahman, the external potency, Brahman, and the living entity, Brahman. Does that make sense? So it's all Brahman. Right? Now, under illusion, one thinks that one is separate, one is not transcendental, or one is not the servant of the Lord. That would be more clear. That one thinks that all this Brahman is for my enjoyment. So you come under the material energy. Right? Now, if you understand, all this Brahman is for Krishna's satisfaction. It means he is the supreme Brahman, is the enjoyer of Brahman. You know what I'm saying? Then one comes under the shelter of the internal potency. Right? But the point is to make that choice, there's a point in between. That's the Tathasta Brahman. Does that make sense? So the soul can be temporarily situated there. But being minute, one being energy, you have to be connected to the Lord, right? And so, therefore, and being minute, we have to be connected to a greater energy in the connection to the Lord. Does that make sense? So that means you can temporarily be on the Tathasta platform. So you either have to go from Tathasta into material or Tathasta into spiritual, into the transcendental. Does that make sense? Right? So we've gone from the Tathasta into material. So now we go from from material back to the Tathasta into the transcendental. You understand? So we will refer, when we're referring to that phenomena, then we're explaining, then you have material, spiritual, and transcendental. Right? Prabhupada uses those terms. That's how we got to it. It's there. Is that there's material, spiritual, and transcendental. Right? Transcendental means that the spiritual is being used for Krishna. Does that make sense? Material means the spiritual is being used not for Krishna. Right? In other words, spiritual is Brahman. Everything's Brahman. Right? But, you know, to make it clear, we give the various...
Once we're in the eternal, we are not anymore Tathasta.
Once in the eternal. The point is it's a situation. It means you're in the Tathasta Shakti, are you Tathasta? When you're in the material energy, are you material energy? Or are you Tathasta? Right? When you're in this internal potency, then you'll still be Tathasta as an energy. But it's where you're situated that matters. You know what I'm saying? You're the same person whether you're outside, you know, whether you're in your house or you're in the prison. You know what I'm saying? You don't change. But the point is in prison, you follow those rules and therefore you have a particular, you know, way of dealing. And when you're out, then it's another thing, right? But if you're just on the street, what happens? We just put you out on the street, right in the middle of the street, right? And by, you know, Krishna's grace, since there's no bad karma, there are no Mack trucks. Okay? Okay? So, but what happens?
Choice,
yeah. But the point is how long do you stand in the middle of the street? Right, why? Yeah, so the point is you deal with that energy around according to, you know, what's proper, then you stay there. So you're not considered in the street. Right? But if you don't deal proper, then you're back in the prison. Yes?
Can we escape the spiritual state? Like,
can you escape the spiritual state?
Being engaged with being situation material, but connecting it to Krishna. So does it mean that
Means it's simultaneous. The point is the transcendental means that there's no material. Right? It's transcendental to the material. But it's dynamic, it's active. So when we use the term here, spiritual, in this case, because spiritual can also mean, we say, the spiritual world. Right? So here's that we're talking spiritual as a situation, not the spiritual world, right? So the spiritual world, in this case, then we're calling transcendental, right? Just to give it a different title. So the point is that you're not doing anything material. That means you are spiritual, but you're doing it to please Krishna, so it's transcendental. So you could say in that way, you're going directly from the material to the transcendental. Right? The point is what's being given is that is the best. But what is being mentioned is that if the attachment is too much or the entanglement is too much, you can use the spiritual platform to break down the attachment, because as soon as you apply intelligence to an emotional state, it kind of loses its fun. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? In other words, if you're having a good time, you don't stop and analyze what's good about it and this and that. Otherwise, as soon as you start really seriously analyzing, it starts looking stupid. You know, all the adults are there, they got their little party hats on, you know, they're blowing those little things and this and that and doing all kinds of stupid stuff and, you know, telling stupid jokes. If you actually analyze this, it's just stupid, right? So therefore, you don't analyze it. But what we're saying is that that spiritual platform is useful where the attachment is so much that we can't see how to connect it to Krishna. So you analyze it and it breaks it down and you start to see what it actually is. So you lose that attachment. So through knowledge and detachment, one is able to work with it. Then you can see out of all that, then, you know, what's the useful part of the party? Right? Is associating with others. Right? So therefore, then because you like to associate, you know, if you're a real party animal, then, you know, the temple program is for you. You know, especially festivals, right? You know, they come from all over India. There's 5,000 people in the temple room. There's not a space for anybody, right? So you can't get more, you know, social than that, you know. We'll leave the animal part for right now, right? So, does that make sense? So then you can see as what you're actually looking for is association of others. Now you can improve, therefore, the quality of association. Right? Because then you actually see the important element. Right? It's not important that you have some stupid hat on, or, you know what I'm saying? The point is that you're interacting with others and everybody's satisfied. So how can you do that on a platform that when you wake up the next morning you can actually remember what you did? You know? So that's the idea. Does that make sense? So that's why it says it's encouraged. Therefore, it means the Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of the non-existence of the material body. Right? But it also goes further that there's the existence of the spiritual body. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So, bottom of 26. Some look on the soul as amazing. Some describe him as amazing. And some hear of him as amazing. While others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all.
The soul
floats in the prana vayu. Yeah. It means the five life airs, then it floats there. Because, see, some are up, some are down, some are, you know, the sideways, frontwards, backwards, in, out. So all of them, if they're all in one place, then one wouldn't go anywhere. So it's a good spot. You know? Does that make sense? So if there's only five life airs, then one of the ways you'd always end up somewhere where you wish you were. When you're free from that, you can. But that's not the point. The point is that if you understand you're servant of Krishna, then you can go where you like, which is to, you know, serve in the Lord's, you know, in the association of the Lord's eternal associates. That's the whole point. So it's the same principle. So bhakti yoga, you're doing the same thing. It's just not so mechanical. We tend to notice mechanics because mechanics give results, right? You control things through mechanics and you get results through mechanics, right? So therefore the controlling and joy, then the central feature is the mechanics. So Abhideya becomes the main point. point. But the problem is the mechanical side of the avideya, rather than the actual overall aspect of the relationship in avideya. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, you're, let's say, cooking for somebody, right? So there's you, there's them, the point of connection is the cooking, right? So now you can be, you know, thinking about them or interacting with them and, you know, cooking and stuff like that. Or you can be just focusing just on the cooking, right? And completely forgetting about the person, right? Because the point is you want to get the result, the cooked thing. But the point is the cooked meal is for the other person's happiness. So the actual point is the cultivation of the relationship. You in the relationship, them in the relationship. So what will cultivate that in the relationship? That's the actual principle. You understand? But the mechanics have to be there. You know what I'm saying? The mechanics are they are the cause, you could say, they are the cause of those, they are the activities and forms that generate or create the situation that that experience can be gained. You know what I'm saying? So in that way, then you can say that the masculine principle is the senior principle, because it's the one that's doing the activity. It's the one that's changing the environment. But the point of changing is because of the relationship, because of the feminine nature. Does that make sense? Yeah? You know, at the same time, it's interesting because it reverses, is that the quality that you're trying to obtain, right, that's the masculine principle, and the forms and activities in principle that go with that, that's the feminine. But when you operate it, it switches. The experience will be the feminine, and the mechanics will be the masculine. That's why there's a non-difference.
So
yogis
have to make endeavor to know the path, how to go.
Yes, so that's why worry about that? You just worry about that you serve Krishna, you'll go to Krishna. Now you serve the yogis, you're not quite sure where you'll end up. Right?
This verse describing impersonalists and biologists?
Is this verse? No, I think it's describing everybody. He's saying, is this verse describing the Mayavadis? No, it's everybody. Because even your gross materialists, when you talk about the soul, it's like, you know, they can't understand what you talk about. You ever try telling all this stuff to your grandmother? You know, it's like that. It's kind of like, okay, you know, very nice, very nice. Now sit down and you eat your, you know, drink your tea, you know, like that. You know, we've had enough discussions, you know. Right? Because they can't what you're talking about. Yes.
Actually, Ramanuja Chera explains that this verse describes the different levels of Vedic education.
Oh.
From the, those who listen without faith, as you mentioned.
Okay.
And then those who listen with faith, but only, they only listen, then they start to describe to others.
Okay.
And then the highest are those who actually see the soul as the Vedic. They realize the glory in the soul.
Okay.
It goes from manana and
okay.
From Shravana to Marana, and then you guess the
realization. Okay. Oh, he uses those terms. So it's those, these, who's it, Ramanuja? Saying Ramanuja describes in this verse that it's describing all the levels of realization. So those who don't have any understanding, the faithless that don't have any understanding at all of the Vedic concept, and those who have faith in the Vedic but don't have much realization. And then those who actually realize the nature of the soul.
Why is it described here as an amazing on each level?
Because amazing has that element that of, it's kind of like beyond the comprehension on one level. So amazing and on the, you know, materialistic platform. You explain all that. Well, that's amazing. So now, you know, about, you know, like that. And then, you know, kind of, yeah, that's amazing. Like, you know, I can't get a grasp on it at all. But, you know, okay, you have the faith in it. And then there's that amazing that, you know, this is the nature of the soul. Because the point is the soul is amazing. God's amazing, so that means anything connected to him is. That just, we don't necessarily, we only appreciate certain aspects that we want. We don't appreciate everything. You know, say, like the devotee, then he sees God's creation. It's amazing. But it's amazing because it's God's creation. It's not amazing on a platform separate. You know, your scientists and that, they're so enamored by the material energy, you know, what it does and what it can do. But what is missed is that that's only like that because it's a manifestation of God's energy. Is that what it says? So that being missed, then it doesn't. That's that way of looking is avoided. But if one understands is that Krishna's, it's Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's design that everything is happening. Right? Then that's, it's quite amazing how he arranges these things. Trees eat through their feet. You know, I mean, far out stuff. Is that, you know, pretty, it's amazing. So there's no Admatattva point here?
There were not.
Okay, so then here, purport. For every living entity, as an individual soul, has its personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. Page. I don't have a 27. I only have a 28. So it's the next page. 28. No. 29. 30. No. Most of the time I get an extra. This time I didn't get one at all.
It's payback time.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because somehow or another I just went straight into lesson 3. Okay. So then the next one, 230. O descendant of Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore you need not grieve for any living being. So now he's brought it back to the soul, so you can't slay the soul. Right? Because otherwise, on the other part, well, that's pretty gross. Just, you know, the body's chemicals, it came from chemicals. It became chemicals, you know. What is it? How does that work? They always say at the funerals, chemicals thou art and chemicals thou shalt be. What is it? You know, how does it that go? Yeah. So like that. So the whole point is it goes back to there, therefore there's no lamentation, right? Why are they saying that? So that everybody will start crying more and like that. No, they're trying to alleviate by putting in some philosophy. So the point is that the soul won't, it means on that platform that's pretty gross, because the point is we are the soul, we are beyond. So it is an Upanishadic scripture. So the point is to bring it back to the soul. So he used that, just even you work on the gross platform, there's no reason to lament. But, you know, in the reality, you know, then, so now he's brought it back to here. So, how the Lord concludes his instructions on the soul. In describing the immortal soul in various ways, Lord Krishna and establishes that the soul is immortal and the body is temporary. Therefore, Arjuna, as a Kshatriya, should not abandon his duty out of fear that his grandfather and teacher, Bhishma and Drona, will die in the battle. On the authority of Sri Krishna, one has to believe that there is a soul different from the material body, not that there is no such thing as soul, or that living symptoms develop at a certain stage of material maturity resulting from the interaction of chemicals. Though the soul is immortal, violence is not encouraged, but at the time of war, it is not discouraged when there is actual need for it. That need must be justified in terms of the sanction of the Lord and not capriciously. Right? So here, even though it technically doesn't matter, doesn't mean that you act whimsically. Because the point is the soul is real, and his entanglement is real, and his method of upliftment is real. So therefore, if you want to be entangled more, you act however you like. You want to be uplifted, you act according to God's directions. Does that make sense? So that will be. Yes.
I was listening to a couple of lectures last night from Mother Gauri about
Mother Gauri
Devi Dasi with the sutra about Sankirtan, and she was saying that this tendency to control and enjoy is so deep, you know, that it would take 40 years of book distribution to get free from it, you know. I said, okay, I get the work cut out now. But my question is, and she said she used to look forward to going on book distribution because she was like, oh, nice, now I have 8 or 10 hours where I can forget about my body, you know, get off the set. So is it possible then with any service to...
Yeah, no, it's possible with any service. Just the point, the book distribution, the nature of it, it's just much a bit more obvious, you know, that's all. Mm. You have that aspect. You have the aspect that it's connected with Shravanam Kirtanam, you know. So of services, it's a very ideal service. Mm. But it's not that's the only service that will do that. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because there's Archan Siddhi. Just by doing deity worship, one can come to that perfectional platform. Mm. Like that? You know, Sadhana Siddhi by one's sadhana. You know, so the book distribution basically would go into that, you know, through the sadhana, you know, like that.
So it's just a matter, like if one is, like you mentioned sadhana, if one is trying to study, and if one applies the focus properly, then one can also achieve the same.
Yeah, focus means you apply what you've studied. Uh-huh. Just studying means... Of course, if it's that focused, yes, one could get realization from it. The point is getting realization. So realization comes from practice of what you know. Right? The Vedic culture always comes back to knowledge and activity. Right? But that knowledge has to be based on what is the actual field. Right? And then because that knowledge and activity will generate a result, who the result's for. Right? So with proper knowledge and the detachment, meaning that the result's not for us, then one will advance. Is that something?
So now, since it is the last lesson, the first lesson, this one?
Yes.
So, how can... what is the lesson of this lesson?
What is the lesson of this lesson? So let us look back at what was the lesson of this lesson. In other words, you have to look back to go forward.
The constitution of all living entities.
Yeah, so in other words, this first point is the constitution of the living entity. In other words, the living entity is not the body, they're the soul. Soul's eternal. Right? So that's been established. Because otherwise there's lamentation for the body, that the body is the manifestation, is the life. No, the soul's separate. Mm-hmm. Right? So the point is that in the soul's eternal, not temporary. So, and the body will always keep changing. So therefore, there's the point is if one understands the eternal nature of the soul, then that's the first step in understanding who you are. Then you can understand who God is, what's the actual relationship. Right? But it's all being applied here in example to Arjuna's situation. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not just this point's been made and then so many points later. It already has a practical application.
Yes.
Is that okay? So is...
Yes.
That's okay.
So it means that to understand that there is no leftover, I can say, of these two philosophies were against.
No, there shouldn't be anything.
Yes.
Because the point is, it's not that the body is real and the body is the soul, or the body is not real and the soul is separate, but also the concept of the living entity being subordinate to Godhead is unreal. Mm-hmm. See, because in both of them, that the subordination to Godhead is not there, because if it's just chemicals, what's the big deal? If you're not the body, you know, then that means you are Brahman. But the point is there is Supreme Brahman. Right? So the whole the Adhikaranas, all living entities, are eternal and subordinate to Godhead. So that's where, and so the first step is establishing the living entity as eternal. Yes. Right? Then we'll come along establishing Godhead and the relationship and all that. Is that okay? Right? And the overall is the, you know, how you say the relation means the, what is it? The overall is man's eternal relationship with Godhead. Right? So that relationship is, in this point, this Adhikarana is we're subordinate. Is that okay?
What happens to that relationship that the soul had with the other soul?
What happens to the relationship that the soul had with the other soul? But, according to philosophy, did the soul have that relationship? The soul thinks he has a relationship, but the relationship was the matter. It means, in other words, you have husband and wife. Okay? So, what's the husband, what's the wife? Do we have a masculine soul and a feminine soul? No. So that means it's the bodies that are related. So the soul relates with the body, therefore, then you say, I have a relationship with that soul. But no, you had relationship with that soul's body because you think you're the body. Does that make sense? So the relationship just goes back to its unmanifest state of the principle of, in this case, that masculine-feminine principle based on the conjugal relationship. So it's just, according to the modes, different details of that manifestation. Right? So the body looks in a certain way, the mentality is in a certain way, but otherwise the principle of masculine and feminine is there, of husband and wife is there. So that's eternal. It just goes back into that. Like, where does the water go? You know what I'm saying? The water goes back into the greater body of water. The air goes back into the greater body. The earth goes into the earth. The fire goes back to the fire. Right? The dust goes back to the dust. You know, like that. Yes, like that. But they only go by what they see there. They don't understand the greater principle. You know, they're touching on it. That's why it has some value or some meaning, but it's not understood in its full state. Is that okay? Okay. Then lesson two, parts and parcels of Godhead. So this is 15:7. So it only has one. I mean, that was one of the bigger of the lessons, I think. One of the biggest, probably, yeah, because it had so many verses. Most of them are a few verses. Okay. 15:7. The living entities in this conditional world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Okay, yes. Say again? The lesson is what Prabhupada gave, and then the 15:7 is specifically. Means what you see here is parts and parcels of Godhead. That's the second point in his analysis of Gita. But then the idea is then 15:7, parts and parcels, keeping that in mind, you'll read 15:7 and then see what are the relevant points. Right? And then you'll build one on the other. So then you're going to build the knowledge that is there in a, you know, the constitution of all living entities is to be eternal servants of Krishna in 2:11 to 30. right? Then they're parts and parcels of Godhead, right? So the first is that the constitution, the entity, is that they're eternal. They're not the body. Then they're parts and parcels of God, right? Then the next will be like the sun and the sun rays, because you say, well, how? Because the point is part and parcel of God, but we can also be like, you know, God's Brahman, we're Brahman, it's all one, and like this. So no, it's like the sun and the sun rays. So it's the same, but it's different, right? One's minute, one's great. One's the origin, one's the expansion. Does that make sense? So it's establishing how, right? And then at the same time is that they're qualitatively one and the same, but not quantitatively. Right, so then the sun and the sun rays, you see, is that the quality is the same, but not the quantity. Does that make sense? The sun rays, they're a ray from the sun, but it has the light, it has the heat, it has the radiation, like that. The sun is the origin; it has the most of that. Does that make sense? Then the parts with those little diamonds, that's Atmatattva. Okay? Then, the purports, those are Prabhupada, again. But what has been chosen, then that's originally, it means that has been, then that is done by the author of the work here.
Vritti?
Huh? Yeah, and then the vritti itself is then giving further explanation. Does that make sense? So it's a combination of, you know, what Prabhupada gave, which is that one line, and then to study that, then we put in the verses and that. Otherwise, the other way to do it, the original one, is you studied it on your own. You know what I'm saying? So then you'd have to figure all this out. So here we're trying to make it a little easier.
Thank you.
Right? Seeing that, what do you call it? Gaur Govinda Maharaj's statement seems to be the general situation of the living entity in the material environment, which is, what is it?
You got a thick layer, Baba.
Yeah, you have a thick layer, Baba. It's a thick layer of ignorance. So, trying to help with the shovel through the ignorance here. You know, trying to. Does that make sense? So we see the three. So Prabhupada is the one in that box, like that. Then we're putting the verse and the purports, right, that are specific of that. Atmatattva is brought out. What are the points being made in that verse, you know, that are in connection with this lesson, right? And then those parts of those purports have been pulled to bring that out, right? Is that okay? And then we sit here and discuss, and hopefully then we get an understanding, and the layer becomes a little thinner, like that. Okay, what is the identity of the living entity? Right? The living entity is eternally the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. It is not that he assumes individuality in his conditional life, and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented, right? So that's the identity. Because otherwise they'll say, okay, we're a fragment. They'll agree with that. But then they'll say, that's only in the conditioned state. In the liberated state, you're not a fragment. You are God, right? But that doesn't quite work out, you know? So the point is we're eternally a fragmental part. That's why these terms are used. We use these terms, fragmental, or part and parcel, right? Part means it's part. Partial means it's, you know, of the same nature. So, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, second point. What are the primary and secondary expansions of the Lord, right? So in other words, means all these questions are at the beginning, you know, because we thought maybe it would work nicely like that. But now, the next volume will put each one in front of the part of the purport. So when there's only one of them, really easy. When there's two, pretty easy. When there's five of them, then we're going to jump back and forth. Okay. Okay. What are the primary and secondary expansions of the Lord? The Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu Tattva, and the secondary expansions are called the living entities. In other words, the Vishnu Tattva is the personal expansion, and the living entities are the separated expansions, right? Separated means they have their own separated consciousness. Right? Not that the Lord's not conscious, but it just means we're not conscious of the Lord, we're separated. So that means, yeah, without the Lord's grace, we don't know the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? It's like you separate, material energy is separated. So through the material energy, you can't see the Lord. Right? So the same way as through the jivas, you can't see the Lord. Because they're separated. So it's only when the Lord descends and explains, or his empowered, you know, devotee explains. So that means when the devotee is empowered with the chit potency. So that means anybody. If they're coming in Parampara, they're explaining the philosophy, how it's been gained in Parampara. That chit potency, that is what is actually doing the work. It's not that the jiva is enlightening the other jiva. No, it's the Lord's internal potency is enlightening the jiva. Does that make sense? Right. So, yeah. By his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms like Lord Rama, Nrisimhadeva, Vishnumurti, and all the predominating deities in the Vaikuntha planets. The separated expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. Then to get through the purport. Okay, yeah. Hold on. Okay. So, okay. Now the next point is, how does the soul become conditioned and liberated? Right? Third point. Every living entity as an individual soul has his personal individuality. Didn't we just read that? Oh, that's what I was reading before, and everybody wondered, what is he talking about? I'm thinking, didn't we just read this? By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. Right? He becomes a conditioned soul, or he's always liberated. So proper use, you stay in your natural state. Right? Improper use, then you become, just like a citizen who follows the laws just remains as a citizen. The citizen who doesn't follow the laws becomes a criminal. Mm. Right? Yes.
The concept of time, like on a spiritual platform, I think I've asked this question before.
Okay.
Is it illusory? Or, I mean,
is time illusory?
Is time a faculty of the material world?
Time as it is, where you are controlled by time, that's a faculty of the world.
So on the
in the spiritual world, it's a support.
Okay.
It means time is there, but the time isn't like here, where it just moves ahead like that.
Uh-huh.
There, it moves according to, it gives that support of the relationship, of the rasa.
So you can time travel?
No, that's for yogis.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, these are all concepts here. It's just like you're having you're not having such a good time.
Mm-hmm.
How long does it last?
Long time.
Okay. You're having a great time. How long does it last?
It's over almost before.
Yeah. So in either way, you're suffering, right? So you're controlled by time.
Mm. So in the spiritual world.
So in the spiritual world, the point is it's only supporting the relationship.
Okay.
So the gopis are having a great time in the rasa dance,
mm-hmm.
right? How long does it last?
Yes,
yeah, means that whole night of Brahma, rather than just a regular human night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still it goes very quickly.
Yeah.
But the point is it is expanded out there to do. But at the same time as they're dancing a night of Brahma, but the cowherd boys are only sleeping a regular night to, you know, to wake up for Krishna, you know, to see Krishna in the morning. So the point is, all these things can be happening at once. You know what I'm saying? So it's just the support for the relationship. You know, the cowherd boys will think, okay, we'll get up, we'll go see Krishna, which is future. But at the same time, as Krishna is always present, so they're thinking of Krishna as in the present. But at the same time, the concept and the relationship is in the future. So that means there's no time because everything is present. But there's that flavor that there is future and past. But here the future and past manifest because there's good, passion, and ignorance. There's only goodness, so there is no. But there's the flavor that there is. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal. He is qualitatively eternal as the Supreme Lord is. In his liberated state, he is freed from this material condition, and he is under the engagement of transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature, and he forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Also notice here is that one is under one or the other, the internal or the external potency, right? As jiva, we're small, we're always under one or the other. But in one, it says, he is under the engagement of transcendental service. In the other, he is dominated by the material modes of nature.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, the domination is a problem. Right? I mean, also, because why domination? Why are we dominated?
Because we want to be controlled and enjoyed.
We want to dominate. So the point is if we're the Purusha, and the material energy is the Prakriti, right? Then how does it work? Right? Yes, means the masculine and feminine principle. What the male principle does, the female principle reciprocates. Does that make sense? Because it follows. You're the controller and enjoyer, so you'll be controlled and enjoyed. Right? You deal nicely, you'll be dealt with nicely. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this whole point is that all the philosophy, the culture, at all levels, in all situations, is always the same. You just use different terminologies to describe the situation because of the nature of variety. Right? The Lord's energy is unlimited in variety. That means that there'll be this great variety of ways of describing it. But it's still one thing. Does that make sense? So there's no change. So it still works the same way. We try to control and enjoy. So therefore, then that will be the response. Right? And then we'll get upset, so we'll get frustrated. So then we take up the Mayavad philosophy, is, you know, I couldn't be the man, you know, and now I'll be the man, I'll be God, you know. It's like, okay, my wife doesn't accept my superiority, so I'll become God, right, you know, like that. And then when that doesn't work, then it's just like, okay, we'll get rid of the existence. Right? You understand? So it works on that same principle. But the underlying principle means that the masculine and feminine reciprocation, that remains the same. But the underlying, as we said, is the feminine nature of the jiva, that it acts in these stages. In a sense, so you have all these things happening at once. So it wasn't all happening like this. It would be very easy to understand, and therefore we get bored. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? Like, you have, just for example, you have so many paintings of the world, right, by all the great artists, and also so many not great artists, but we're not going to discuss those, okay, of the masters. What painting is the most well known and the most discussed? Why?
Because she's painted very beautifully.
She's painted beautifully.
Because it's the one that follows the religion of painting.
Okay, it follows the religion of painting, so that's there. But in relationship to the point we're making right now.
The expression is not real?
Yeah, you can't tell if she's smiling or she's not. Does that make sense? And so therefore you can't quite tell. You know what I'm saying? So people are still talking about hundreds of years later. You know what I'm saying? These other paintings, you go, okay, that's nice. That must be worth a lot. Mm. Nobody talks about how much the Mona Lisa costs, because they're just talking about the painting. Does that make sense?
Beyond price.
Yeah. So it's just, so that's the point, is that God being unlimited in everything, therefore any manifestation of, you know, expanding from Him will have that same quality. Therefore, it can always be discussed and talked about. If it was so simple, then you get bored. But therefore, there's all this thing, we just keep going. Therefore, I'm saying, there's the underlying that we're feminine. But we've taken on the masculine principle. But what are we dealing with as the masculine principle? Still feminine, right? Because there's only God and the feminine, and the creation, which is feminine. Right? So you have these layers of the female jiva is taken on the mood of the male and is dealing with the energy, which is female. Right? So because they take that male form, right, that mood, then the energy responds in the feminine way for that mood. Right? Does that make sense? And but at the same time, is our doing that in the first place is because of the underlying feminine nature of needing to be, you know, how you say, connected to something, the dependency. So you have all these things happening at once. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes more complicated. Yes, so that means if you had a Facebook page for the material world, then in status it would say it's complicated. Yes.
Could you explain the transition? We try to enjoy it.
We try to enjoy it.
And then we're frustrated and we say, I couldn't do it as a man, I tried to be God. Like this, you know, how from a karma become a maya-vani with these principles?
How do you go from the karmi to the maya? Because the point is, karmi is you have full faith that by the manipulation of the material energy, you will become happy. But when that doesn't work, then it's got to be that my happiness is real, but this material energy is false. So therefore, it's illusory. That's why I can't get it here. Because I can't be wrong. Right? I'm the controller. I'm doing it. You know, like that. So therefore, then they work on that principle. Right? And in other words, like let us say the person is there, right? And, you know, at least, let's say in general, he's a recognized person. Okay? He has so many abilities and like that. But somebody doesn't recognize his status. He deals with him as an ordinary man. So what is one of the techniques that will be used to try to maintain your equilibrium of identity? What are you going to say to the other person who doesn't respect you? Nothing. Any idea? No, but I'm this, and I'm that, and this one this, and then this I'm that. You know, you're going to try to establish yourself on a bigger platform. So you can't get bigger than God. Does that make sense? And the point is you want to be the controller. So if God is the controller of everything, if by becoming God, then I become the controller of everything. Then everything will go the way I like. You know what I'm saying? That's at that level, the Purusha level. Right? But the underlying, what we said, the feminine, is that you're not protected, therefore you'll take that process into your own hands. As long as it's going along nicely, it seems great. But as soon as that has a problem, then you just go into a state of nothingness.
Apathy.
Yeah, an apathy. Does that make sense? So that's underlying it. So that gives rise to, what is it? Raga, Bhaya, and Krodha. Right? That's coming because of the feminine nature. You understand? Does that make sense? Because for Krishna, whatever he thinks, it happens. So he doesn't have that problem. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature, and he forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So he forgets. That means that's his natural position, is to remember that. Right? So the point is he forgets. So that's the covering. It's not that he changes or he transforms. The living entity is eternal. Right? It's the material energy that transforms. Right? As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain his existence in the material world. Right? Because he has to maintain himself. If the Lord's taking care, there's not a problem. You want to take care, it's a problem. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so we're not going to get through more. Okay, so then tomorrow we'll continue with the last two points. Today's Friday. Okay, yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki,
Jai.
Chaitanya Govardhana ki.